Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Pointless Exercise Podcast. Today we have a special guest, and it's Bruce Miles, formerly of the Daily Herald and now of the BruceMiles.net blog and co-author of the book The Phenom. And Bruce, you're supposed to be retired.
Yeah, well, I put the semi in semi-retirement, but yeah, it's been kind of busy. Like a little bit of freelance work with Athletes Unlimited, the great women's sports group that plays softball over here in Rosemont. And yeah, you know, I figured with this blog, get one started just to kind of exercise the craft and to tackle some subjects that I can tackle without any restraint or without any bosses looking over my shoulder. I can just kind of freeform it and kind of go whimsical with it.
Was it Bob Golic who said that when he went from, I think he went from outside linebacker to middle linebacker to defensive end to tackle. And he said he was devolving. In football, he was going from standing up, he was getting progressively lower. So you going from the newspaper down to a lowly blog like me, it's kind of, you're kind of the Bob Golic now of sports writers.
Yeah, I would say there's irony in that, but I was always nice to the quote unquote bloggers back like in the early 2000s when all you guys started. So I didn't, you know, call you guys mom's basementers or anything like that. So I'm really glad I didn't kind of do that.
Yeah, most of us deserve it. So that would have been fine. Okay, so you just launched the blog last week, and I think I read your third post today. It was one I think you wrote yesterday about Kyle Schwarber.
Yeah, everybody's kind of favorite man child who is tormenting the throw men right now with a lot of home runs. Exactly. It's just, he's always been kind of a fascinating topic for me just because all the things he's done, overcoming the injury, the whole home run on top of the board in 2015. And what caught me was they put him back in the leadoff spot, which was supposed to have ruined his career in Chicago when Joe tried that in 2017. Now Joe's protege, Davey Martinez, did it, and all hell's broken loose with Kyle, and I'm kind of glad to see it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've seen him be streaky before, but very few people have ever been streaky like he was. So you started on the beat in 98. With the Cubs?
Yeah, 98, and that's Sammy's 20 home run.
Yeah, 20 homers in June. And then Kyle didn't hit his first until, I forget.
June 12th.
Okay, so June in the 12th. Last 18 days of the month, he hit 16 home runs.
That's pretty wild.
That's pretty ridiculous. Yeah, so, you know, fans now are, how could they let him go? How could they possibly have let Kyle go? And I didn't have a problem with them moving on from Kyle, although I knew I would miss him, but they didn't get better. You know, they were lucky to get Jock Peterson. Jock fell in their lap when he turned on the contract with the White Sox, and then nobody made him any offers. And I think his agent basically called the Cubs and were like, would you like Jock? So that was the thing. It's not moving on from a player. It's moving on from a player and not doing anything to get better. And so next year when Chris Bryant is wherever he is and has a huge month. I mean, if people lost their minds over Schwarber, you know, they'll be throwing babies off roofs next summer.
Yeah, I think it's an easy thing for fans and media people to do is, like, when a guy gets hot like that, point to it and say, aha, look at this, Jed, you screwed up. I remember in April of 2004, Cubs fans at Wrigley chanting, he sop Choi, yep. He sop Choi, and they were actually booing a guy named Derek Lee. Yep. Well, you know, how did that turn out? So, you know, you have to be kind of careful. It's fun. Sure, it's fun, and it's kind of tweak. It's fun to tweak the Cubs and the Ricketts family a little bit or a lot. But, yeah, it's easy to fall into those traps. But I'd say enjoy it. Enjoy it while he's doing it. And I just kind of wanted to go back to where this all kind of started with the Cubs lost Dexter Fowler, and they were looking for a leadoff man. And maybe Joe wasn't so crazy. And, you know, I'm not sure that that's why Schwarber struggled in the first half of 2017 and it was a leadoff hitter. He didn't play the entire season before until coming back, you know, in the World Series. So, you know, good for him. One of the better guys I've ever dealt with, and good for him, and let him enjoy this and, you know, keep hitting those.
Well, what I remembered about that in 2017 was how stubborn they were about sending him to Iowa. You know, he was clearly flailing. And it's like, all right, just send him back for a few weeks, let him mash some AAA pitching and bring him back. And they just wouldn't do it. They made it seem like they were gonna admit failure if they sent him back. But I thought, well, that isn't that why you have AAA? So you can send a guy back and let him work on something and then bring him back. And it kept getting worse and worse and worse. And then they finally gave in and sent him down.
Yeah, he was kind of their project. I mean, first round pick in 14, you know, everybody loves him. We remember the home run in 15. We remember the World Series. So, yeah, I mean, especially since he didn't play at all in 16, and there was no disgrace. And, you know, he's the last guy that's going to complain. He didn't like it. And as it turns out, I think they had an injury and they brought him back like 10 days after they sent him down. And he actually had a pretty good, he hit 17 home runs in the second half of that season. So, you know, it turned out okay. And his numbers since then have been, you know, been okay. You'd like probably a little higher batting average and on base, but as long as the slugging is like that, I mean, certainly the Nats are going to take it.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't good last year, but it was 60 games. You know, some guys like Jason Hayward had a really hot, like 3 weeks. And so his numbers looked really good after 60 games. I don't know what they would have looked like if they'd have played 102 more. And Kyle kind of felt to me like he was the opposite of that. That had they played another 102 games, his numbers probably would have gotten back to where they typically get to. But you were stuck with wherever you were after the second month ended. And that's what you got judged on. But
yeah, I've kind of tried to forget that whole thing. The whole thing was just... was eerie and kind of spooky the whole season. And of course they did what they usually do the last few years in the so-called postseason. they had last year. So I don't know, we'll see where it goes. You know, he'll probably tail off a little bit, but my gosh, I think he's on pace for like 52 or 53 home runs, over 100 RBIs. So, you know, maybe make the All-Star team and maybe do another home run derby. And he got cheated out of the last one when they kind of kept the clock going for Mr. Harper there.
Yep. And started quick pitching to get Bryce more swings. I guess there's home field advantage in the home run derby.
Yeah, so if you have Schwarber and Ohtani in the home run derby, the All-Star game won't be worth watching, but that will be.
It sounded like Schwarber was going to need some convincing to do the derby again. Because he said,
I don't believe that.
He said it. He goes, all I remember was it was fun, but I was really sore.
Yeah, I don't doubt it, but I think he'll do it if asked.
I mean, I'm glad that Ohtani is going to go and he's going to do the derby. I think it'll be fun to watch. But, man, if I were the Angels, there is no way in hell I would let him do that. None.
No, I mean, you got the Joe managing, putting lead off wherever he's doing with him. I mean, that's crazy enough. And nobody likes Joe Madden more than me and maybe even you. But, no, I don't. You got to pitcher like that. No, you ain't going.
Yeah. Joe is probably the perfect guy for Shohei. At least, well, the perfect guy if you want to see maximum Shohei, Joe is your guy. You know, he might be the only manager who would be willing to say, all right, we don't need a DH then on Daisy pitches. He's just, you know, he's going to go, you know, 5 or 6 innings, and then either we're going to pinch hit the rest of the game or he's going to go play right field, which he's done a couple of times. Yeah, you need somebody who's he's the perfect, he's the out-of-the-box manager for the out-of-the-box player.
And what's not to like about that? I mean, he gave us stuff to write for the 5 years, whatever it was he was here, Joe did. So, yeah, I think you're right. And he loves, and there's a part of him, a lot of him, that really loves National League-style baseball. So any time that he can have Ohtani in the lineup, have him pitch and be the pitcher, I mean, he just loves that kind of stuff with moving guys around the diamond and double and triple switching.
Yeah, well, they had a game over the weekend where Shohei came out, and so they were having to pinch hit in the pitcher spot, and it ended up going to extra innings. Their backup catcher was in. He got hurt. They had to bring the left fielder in to catch, and they didn't have another player, so one of their starting pitchers went out and played left field. And they gave up the lead in the 10th, but they tied it. They got to play the 11th, and then they got blown out. But, you know, it was chaos, but it was like, you know, Joe did that his first year in, up in a game in Milwaukee, where all of a sudden, you know, Pedro Strop and Travis Wood are both taking turns playing left field.
And that was great stuff. And then you think it's crazy, and it probably is, but then in the postgame, Joe explains it, and it's like, yeah, that makes sense. Even if it doesn't, it's like he takes you through every step of it, and it's like, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. Don Zimmer had done that with – I can't remember who the lefty was. It was Les Lancaster, and I don't know if it was Paul Assenmacher, it was somebody. He had done the same thing where he wanted the lefty. He wanted to bring a righty in, but he wanted the next batter was a lefty. And he's like, oh, I'll just leave him in the game for a batter. So he went and sent, he just swapped him out into left field and then finally brought, when I think it was time for Les to just take over for good, and then he put an actual outfielder in to play left. But
yeah, and like Lou put like Sean Marshall in left field.
Yeah.
One game as well. So
super athletic Sean Marshall. I mean, you would just do that just for, you know, probably a huge asset out there. Yeah, maybe not. One of the frustrations the front office had with Joe was while Joe was open to their suggestions, Joe was going to manage the game the way he wanted to manage it. And they basically ran to open the door to let David Ross come in so that they would have more influence over how the games are run. But in the last couple of games, we saw instances where do you think David Ross knows he can change the pitcher without double switching?
I saw you in one of your pointless exercise newsletters, shameless plug there.
Yeah,
I saw that you posted that as well. But yeah, we used to joke that before Joe got there, maybe even when he was there, that Theo and Jed would send the lineup via pneumatic tube, like at the bank, down to the manager's office, you know, to Ricky or to Dale or whoever. And, you know, Joe would look at it and throw it in the fireplace. Yeah. He probably had one in his office anyway. But I don't know. There's been some crazy stuff going on with some of these games and you know, where these pitchers end up batting in the lineup.
Yeah, well, they had – it bit them on Tuesday night when they double-switched when Dan Winkler came in. But they had no intention of having Winkler pitch more than an inning. So there's no reason to double-switch. That moved the pitcher spot up. And then at the end of the game when they had their rally, the reason Jose Lobaton was batting was because the pitcher spot had come up. And it should have been. It should have been Ian Happ. It was the cleanup hitter. The merits of batting Ian Happ in the cleanup spot, no matter how many guys are injured, is questionable. But then doing a completely unnecessary double switch and ending up with a guy who hasn't had a hit since 2018 trying to hit Josh Hader. And then a guy who turns out that can't be trusted to run hard all the way to first base, which is why he ended up then having to lunge for the bag and fell down and separated his shoulder. Although, I think that was probably a veteran move for Jose, because the 60-day DL pays a lot better than being DFA'd, which was coming up. So
yeah, and you know what? They kind of owe him for getting picked off first base in the 17 NLDS in Washington there. And, you know, what do you have about a 1-foot lead and he still got picked off first base? There's no business the Cubs had winning that series. Nope. But, you know, thanks to him and Dusty and maybe a few other factors they did. And that, well, they went to L.A. and that was that. But, hey, maybe they felt they kind of owe Jose a little bit here.
Yeah, that was pretty much what I knew him from. When they saw they signed him, was oh, that's the guy. That's the guy.
Where was
laid
he going?
Like
was
a slug.
Second anyway.
It's just terrible. It was great, and it was terrible. That whole game, it's one of the weirdest games anybody has ever seen. That, you know, the Nats get the lead and bring Max Scherzer in, and this is going to be it. And then the Cubs, through just the most ridiculous sequence of events, I think scored 5 runs in that inning, got the lead back. I know, that catcher's interference and there's all kinds of crap. Well, you know, you really
and then you thought Harper was going to do something in the bottom of the last inning when he came up, but he didn't, and we're off to LA the next morning. So
yeah, Wade Davis struck him out, and then his arm fell off, and pretty much has stayed that way forever.
Yeah, but they got like 34 out of 35 from him that
amazing.
Year.
Amazing. Yeah, but especially late in the season and the playoffs, they were just riding him as hard as they could. Then he was unavailable in L.A. We ended up with John Lackey coming in, pitching to Justin Turner. You know, it's too easy to look back at now that the wheels have appear to have fallen off the final season with what's left of the core, and people to go, oh, they didn't do anything after 2016. You know, I mean, they didn't. They didn't win. They went to it. They went to another NLDS the next year, or CS that year. They lost to the Dodgers.
Yeah.
So that was 3 in a row, which is pretty amazing for the Cubs. But there was just so much weird Some of it cool, some of it just downright like, what? That happened in all those years. They certainly were entertaining, if nothing else. And we live when, you know, we do these, Mike Donahue and I do these Remember This Crap podcasts where we randomly pick a season and try to remember what we can about it. And there are so many terrible seasons to go through. They're still fun because there's guys to make fun of and things that happened and whatever. But it's like, yeah, it's disappointing they didn't win more than one World Series, but they won one, which we didn't think we'd ever see. They were really good for a long time, which we also didn't see.
No, and then, you know, it's 17, you can understand. It's awfully hard to repeat.
Yeah,
so they lose to 7, and they lost to a damn good team. And the Dodgers are okay, but then what happened the next couple of years, especially with the offense, would just seem inexplicable because Joe would always say in like 2015 and 2016, look at these guys now, and then picture them in 3 or 4 years, they're going to be even better. But they didn't really get better. They just all kind of hit a level, plateaued there. And then when you face that kind of pitching in the postseason,
Yeah, I mean, it's a testament to poor internal scouting, to not facing up to the fact that the guys you like the most on your team have limitations you may not have originally foreseen, because there were trades to be made with these guys before it became evident to everybody that they had holes. Like, you know, we even kicked it around again today about they hung on to Albert Almora, when they should have been the first ones to realize Albers is not that good. And there was a market for him, but they hung on to him thinking they were going to turn him into something that he couldn't be turned into. And then there was no market for him. And we saw it with some other guys. I mean, they did. It turns out they got a decent return because they got Wade Davis for Jorge Soler, which, what was it now, 3 years ago, looked like a terrible thing. But he hasn't been very good since then. But there were other guys they just hung on to. And obviously, you're not going to trade. There's no reason to have traded Rizzo or Bryant or Baez. But there were other guys. There were trades to be made for Schwarber.
Absolutely.
And they just wouldn't do it. They're like, no, we know better. Well, and they didn't, clearly.
That's kind of the vexing thing, because these guys are supposed to be such smart guys. I remember the Hendry administration used to get crucified for that, being poor self-scouters. And there's some truth to that. But, you know, he traded Bobby Hill and got freaking Aramis Ramirez. Yeah. And Hesop Choi that we mentioned a couple of minutes ago, and got Derek freaking Lee.
Yep.
So, you know, they did some good things. They made some bad. They traded Josh Donaldson, and they traded Josh Harrison for a bunch of crap. But, I guess Harden for Donaldson was okay for a short period of time until Harden's arm fell off.
They were trying to match the CC Sabathia
trade. Oh, absolutely. And they said that there was no coincidence or there was no correlation there. But anyway, that's – but
that was a guy who – I mean, when Rich Harden was good, he was so good. And then there would be games where, you knew the arm just wasn't responding. And you weren't going to get anything out of him that day. It's like, oh. But yeah, he was – I remember when they first got him. It's like, holy crap. Well, they did it again. Well, they didn't do it again. But yeah, I mean, it was – so the ignominious sweep in Milwaukee the last 3 days. You know, they're six out now. Where 6 days ago they were tied for first, and now they're six out. And so it's all doom and gloom. You can look at it a couple of ways. You can look at it as May was just a complete aberration. They somehow hit for a month, and it showed that if they could hit, this team could be pretty good. I mean, they're in a very bad division. Even the Brewers aren't really that good. The Brewers have really good pitching. They don't have much of an offense, except they managed to score 31 runs in three games against the Cubs. The Cardinals are bad. The Reds are not a complete team. The Reds have some really good players and a bunch of really bad. But you could look at it from the Cubs standpoint and go, well, we limped into Milwaukee, and we had Bryant for one game when he really probably shouldn't have played, and we didn't have Rizzo, and Patrick Wisdom kept getting hurt. He was on the ground most of the time.
I had visions of Derek Lee and Scott Air with that one when the ball went to first base, and the Scott Air in LA threw it and broke Derek Lee's wrist. I had visions of that.
Yeah. So you could look at that and say, well, guys are starting to come back now. It looks like Nico will be back tomorrow. Rizzo claims he's feeling better. He'll be back in a few days. Although they never DL these guys. That's the other thing they've been so stubborn with, is these little nagging injuries that you know are going to keep a guy out. They won't put him on the injured list. And then they end up missing 8 games instead of 10. Like, see, we were right. No, you played 8 games shorthanded instead of playing without that guy for 2 at full strength. So you look at it and go, well, they'll get this stuff back together. And in 2018, they were 5 games up on September 2nd and didn't win. So being 6 games out on July 1st doesn't have to be that big a deal. But then you look at it the other way, and it's, you don't have any starting pitching. And your bullpen, which was really good, is now starting to show signs of cracking for 2 reasons.
Because because of the starting pitchers aren't going. You're not getting quality starts, and you're just going to kill these guys.
You're using way too much of the bullpen. And then a couple of the guys, very notably, over the last few days, for some reason, the ball's just not acting the way that it did before.
I had a guy in the gym the other day say something about a certain pitcher. He's just getting hit. And I said, it might be a little sticky situation that's because.
Yeah, I don't want to name names, but I mean, it couldn't be more obvious. Tommy Nance might as well wear a Spider Tech t-shirt when he's not pitching. And then so you wonder about Tapera. Tapera could easily just as much be he's worn out as he is. But it also could be a very conveniently timed calf injury, while they try to figure out where to hide the sunscreen so that when he comes back.
Yeah, we've never seen those before.
No.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Cubs went from the clear plan was to trade some of these guys, get some assets, and get ready for next year. Then it was, oh my God, we're in first place. This is screwing up our plan. And now we're going to add. And I never had delusions of them adding anything of note. Figured it was going to be the Dan Hare and Tommy Hunter acquisitions on trade deadline day in 2015. Now, Aroldis Chapman wasn't going to walk in. Now they're back to the point again where they have to decide if they should try to see what they could get for some of these guys. And they're in a real quandary in that. In fact, I want to know what you think about this. I think they're screwed because if they continue to lose, it most likely means that the guys that they would like to trade aren't playing well, which is why they're losing, which means if you try to trade them, you're not going to get anything for them. And if those guys get healthy and start to produce, they're going to win. And then you're not going to want to trade those guys. So I think they got to a point in the season now where it's just not going to matter. You might as well, if you're one of the weird Cub fans who's like, oh, they should see what they can get for these guys, and then we'll, you know, because I'm sure it'll be a great plan for next year. You might as well stop rooting for that. You might as well root for them to be winning these games, because I don't know who they could trade. They could trade Craig Kimbrell and probably get a really nice return. It's funny that his option for next year, which looked like an albatross this time last year, is now one of the biggest assets you could possibly have in a trade, because the team doesn't just get him for the rest of this year. You know, he's $16 million option for next year. If he's remotely close to this good, he's well worth that. So, I mean, that might be the guy you can get something for.
Probably the most. They're in kind of baseball hell right now. And the worst part you can be in baseball is in between on your swing. Now they're in between as a front office. So like for all the reasons you just mentioned, they want to fill the ballpark. They want to recoup some of the money that they don't have. And, you know, so what do you do? And, you know, in a lot of ways, in a market like this, it's a shame because a guy like Chris Bryant really is somebody that you should want to build your entire franchise around. Good guy on the field, good guy off the field, photogenic, telegenic. And how many positions can't he play? He plays almost every position, and he does so without fail. Fans complain about, you know, players this and that. Bryant isn't any of that. He's a guy that you should be putting on your season ticket brochures, but – you know, it looks like he's probably going to be gone. And, you know, I just think this month is going to be so weird and so crazy. There's going to be media feeding frenzies, especially as the Cubs, if they continue to fall further out of the race. And they've got the Reds and the Phillies coming up, and then pretty soon the All-Star break. But I just think it's going to be kind of just a weird month with kind of this cloud hanging over. And, you know, is my favorite guy going to be gone? And, you know, what the hell happened to this core and dominating for all these years? So I just think it's going to be weird. And the feeding frenzy is going to start, I think, sooner rather than later.
Yeah, well, you're right. So the two guys you can get a lot for would be Kimbrell and Bryant, assuming they can prop Bryant up. get it back on the field so that the team can think he can be reasonably healthy. But yeah, I mean, you as a franchise, you look for decades to find a player as good as Chris Bryant, and then you get one, and you never even make a serious attempt to keep him. I mean, they've paid lip service to it, and they've hidden behind the he's a Scott Boras client, and those guys never resign. No, most of the time they don't, but they do. There are clients who Boras is he may even advise against it. But the player works for, or the
agent works for the player.
Boras works for the player, and yeah. If you make a good offer and Chris Bryant looks at it and goes, "I really like to stay," he can stay. But there's been no indication that they've ever made a serious offer to him.
No, there doesn't. And like you say, the whole Boras thing I think is a phony issue. Like you said, if the player wants it done, you know, he can get it done. But it's one of those things, and you know they lucked into him. You know, if the Astros don't take Appel, the Cubs probably are, and then they're really screwed. But it's just a situation. It's too good to be true. What they got from him, who he is, what he is, and now to think that by July 31st or before he could be on the Yankees or you know, God forbid for Cub fans, the White Sox, anything like that. I'm just throwing stuff at the wall here, but yeah, just kind of a shame.
Yeah, it's he was that rare, super hyped prospect that was actually better than what everybody said he was going to be. I mean, it wasn't just a matter of those guys don't pan out. He did.
When he's healthy, he's an elite player. Not just a good player, not a great. He's an elite player when he's healthy. And all this nonsense about him being soft or being injury prone, that doesn't even mean anything. You could get hurt. He plays hard. He got hurt playing hard, and he also played through a lot of injuries and came back a lot sooner from ankle injuries and everything else. Back is a tough thing. A shoulder's a tough thing, but he played through so many injuries, and a lot of the stuff directed him has just been pure bullshit.
Yeah. Well, I used to talk about – it reminds me a lot of the comparison between Kerry Wood and Mark Pryor. And the idea was, and I always felt like Kerry stuck around longer, but Kerry's injuries were always like he ruptured something, or he completely tore something. Where the ones they would give on Pryor would be, we think it might be a bone bruise in his shoulder, or it might be whatever. Well, it turns out he was every bit as hurt, probably more hurt. And so people thought he was a wimp because he was trying to pitch through stuff when he clearly shouldn't have been trying to pitch through it. And he somehow got the reputation as a guy who wasn't tough when he was every bit as tough as the guy that everybody held up as, you know, as the tough guy. And I think a lot of that it was kind of a Bryant-Rizzo comparison.
Yeah, and those are unfair because if you remember, Pryor fell on his shoulder after somersaulting over Marcus Giles. And then the next year, Brad Hopp hits a baseball 100 and some miles an hour right off his elbow. Yep. He's lucky that the elbow wasn't fractured and his career was done then. So, yeah, those things, I always hesitate to get caught in that kind of stuff.
Well, and that the whole Marcus Giles thing, the fact that they didn't just immediately – it was June. The fact that they didn't just immediately take him off the field and go get him checked out. They're out there like, oh, he's going to the mound. He's going to throw some warm-up pitches. And then he pitched, I think, an inning. It's like, no.
Yeah, and then, you know, he should not have. About it. Same with Wood. Well, he wanted to be out there.
Right.
Shouldn't be up there. And then they escaped with the trainer.
Right. You want the player to want to be out there. The grown-ups are supposed to be the ones who go, nope, we're taking it out.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they scapegoated the trainer and fired him at the end of the season. So that whole thing ended up being kind of a mess.
Yeah. Yeah, the Cub trainers for a while were the batting coach. It's just easy to change them. It'll fix everything. So, you know, Rizzo's had an interesting year in a lot of ways. You know, he made a lot of, I don't know if it was him, whoever leaked in spring training that the Cubs had made him a contract offer and that it was insulting. And they got off to a bad start. And he really hasn't hit for power. He's hit better, but he hasn't hit for power. His back, which we know is an issue, has now come up twice. He had the whole thing about, you know, he got cap thought that he was going to use him as an example of a player who got vaccinated, only to find out that he didn't get vaccinated. Is there any chance that he can get in the offseason as good an offer as the one he turned down in the spring?
I don't think so. Especially with first baseman, you can go out and get one. The fielding might have dropped off a little. You saw the base running blunders, which happens, I think. I don't think that's symptomatic of anything. He's another guy, face of the franchise type of guy, but maybe, you know, he's on the downside of that. But no, to answer your question, I don't think so.
So they've got that, and then there's Javi. What is Javi worth? I mean, there are things he does. I've always said that outside of the batter's box, he's the best player in baseball.
And most exciting.
Nobody makes plays like he can in the field. He's the most ridiculously creative and mostly successful base runner. And then obviously in the batter's box, he has a tremendous amount of power for shortstop. But, you know, he still swings at everything. I mean, he's a good player, but he's not having a good year. And he's not having it at the worst possible time for him, because he's a free agent. And, you know, there is no CBA for next year. And there isn't going to be one until God knows when. I was joking yesterday that, you know, see everybody in spring training in June. So he's facing a very uncertain market and future. And you almost wonder if maybe him and Rizzo, it really makes no sense for Rizzo given his age. But there are going to be players in the league, and Javi might be one of them, who end up having to take a one-year deal next year just to reset their value. Because even say there is a lockout, or, well, there's going to be one. I can't imagine there's not going to be one. There's going to be that mad scramble then before the season to sign free agents, and nobody's going to get what they want. The owners are going to have them, and it may be smart for guys to just be like, all right, give me a year. And it might not be with the Cubs, but he may end up taking a one-year deal somewhere. I mean, that's another guy that I'm sure they tried to lock up. I don't know how hard, but they didn't. And now they're looking at both sides being upset. Him leaving and not getting the money he thought, and him leaving and them getting nothing for it.
And then what are you left with? I mean, just perish the thought. What are you left with if this happens to him or anybody else on the team? So, you know, that's another one you would hope, and that's another guy that Joe talked about early on in the career about the plate discipline and everything going to improve over time. And there were signs of that, but you know, you look at the season he's had this year and the pitch selection and so forth, and it hasn't been good.
Yeah.
So where they go with that, I don't know.
We've always been used to when Javi comes up in a big spot that his back is in mortal peril, because he's going to swing as hard as he can at whatever. But we see an awful lot of those at bats, even in non-big spots. And then, like the other night, he purposely lays back and hits one to right field, ends up with a triple. And in the past, it always felt like if he did that a couple of at-bats, he kind of reset himself, and then he'd go on a little bit of a tear. But he's way too old now to have to continue to do that. You're supposed to have already figured this out by now.
Yeah, this is his seventh year, I think, in the big leagues, or seventh full year, if you count 15, came up in 14. But yeah, just one of those guys that really, I think, maybe hit the plateau, and, you know, he is what he is, and that's what he's going to be for the rest of his career. You know, how do you change that? Joe would always say, Joe, man, you can't change a guy's DNA.
Yeah.
And you got to draft that or sign it, and if you're signing a guy, that's who he's going to be, yeah, most likely.
And so he's still – I mean, he's a very useful player. He's still a good player. Even when he hits 240 with a 292 on base, he's going to slug five, whatever. And he's,
yeah.
The defense has been weird this year because, you know, it's 14 errors. I think that's his career high. He's already gotten it. And a lot of them have been throwing, and a lot of them have been him not stepping. Like, he just wings it across. And it's just, that's very strange. Yeah, so I don't know where they go with Javi. And you're right. Now, say he leaves, what do you got? I guess Nico's playing shortstop. And maybe Eric Sogard can come back and play second base for another year. Won't that make everybody happy?
No.
So that's not good. No. So then similarly, while we're depressing everyone and talking about the demise of some of our favorites, is there any reason that Jake Arrieta should make another start for the Cubs?
I don't think so. And we all heard the clip on the radio where Gordon Whitmire asked him about that. And he goes, I don't want to talk about that, Gordon, or whatever it is. Go ask David. Yeah. It's kind of painful to watch. I was downtown his last start in Milwaukee the other day, yesterday, and I was sitting in a place and it was 7-0. And then you started to see the Brewers come back, and you might have even been the one that tweeted, he's not going to hold this, is he? And it's almost painful.
I was very optimistic. I was like, he's not going to get through the fourth. He didn't get through the second.
That's what it was. And you could just see it eroding. But, you know, you might have even tweeted, you know, he's afraid of, you know, the 91 contact, you know, pitching the contact at 91 or whatever it is. But, boy, I just can't see it. It's been going on too long like this.
So Jim Deshaies basically addressed that because I think Boog asked him directly. And he's like, no, he said, this was in the second inning, still early on in the second. He's like, he goes, I think you got to get somebody up. He said, because it's not that Jake doesn't know what to do with this lead. He just can't do it. He was trying to throw strikes because the whole idea was just stay ahead and let him, you know, I can give up 6 runs and win this game. But he couldn't throw strikes.
No, and this shouldn't be surprising because we've seen this with the Phillies his last couple of years there. Well, I think in an ideal situation, which they don't have, obviously, when you get rid of a guy like Darvish, is, you know, Jake is a nice back of the rotation kind of option for you. But now, you know, with guys on the out, Kyle Hendricks is really about the most dependable guy and the one you can rely on the most beyond that. But it's kind of painful, especially since Cubs fans finally remember Jake, and I know Cubs fans hold on to that kind of stuff forever, but it just might be time.
I was very I didn't want him to bring him back, and I didn't want to bring him back because I didn't want to see this. And so I even said in my mind, Jake never came back. Jake Arrieta left after 2017. And I don't know who this guy is who's here, but I'm going to purposely try to not remember this. You know, it's so frustrating because they made 100% the right call after the 2017 season. They let him go. And they basically said, go get paid somewhere else. Thank you for everything. And then 3 years later, he's the cheapest, most nostalgic option to slap another pitcher into their rotation, so they go sign him. They made the right call baseball-wise and knew, because they worked with him every day, that because he was such a good athlete, I mean, they unlocked him by basically telling him, forget all the crap the Orioles were trying to fix you. Pitch the way you want to. And he's such a good athlete that he could pitch across his body and be good. But they knew that there would come a time relatively early. Well, he also was older when they got him because he'd floundered in the Orioles system so long. They knew it would only be a few years before he lost. Inevitably, players get older. They lose a little of their athleticism. And you just can't get away with it anymore. And so they let him go. And then they brought him back when he's 3 years older and that much less likely to be able to pitch that way.
And then those mechanics catch up with you sooner or later, but they do throw, no matter how strong you are, or how many Pilates you've done, those mechanics, that cross body throwing, that catches up with you. I just kind of thinking about when Jake came back the next year with the Phillies, his first year with the Phillies was all the comparison of him and Darvish. Boy, this Darvish is soft and he's hurt. And here they are, tough Jake is back in the Phillies dugout. And we're all going to go interview him. And, you know, what you wouldn't give to have, you know, Darvish right now over, you hate to say it, Jake, but.
Well, if they had simply kept you, you bump everybody in the rotation down one slot. Kyle is, you know, one of the better number twos. You can live then with Zach Davies giving you 4 1/3 as long as he's only given up a couple of runs. And then Adbert, who the biggest problem with Adbert is going to be, at some point, he's going to hit. It's not going to be an issue now, doesn't it? He's going to hit his innings limit, and they're going to have to shut him down. The Trevor Williams thing, I always felt was a waste of time, and it still is. And then Jake was a waste of time, and it still is.
And so here you are, and this is what we've talked about, and this is why it just doesn't bode well. When you get quality starts, you win. They're down like around 14th out of 15th in quality starts. And I used to track those year by year. People derided that stat, but it really does mean something. You get them, you win. Even bad teams, when they get quality starts, they win. So, you know, they're not doing that. And they used to be, you know, even if their bad team batting average was down, their OBP and walks were always 1 or 2 in the league. They're not doing that either. So it's just a lot of things that don't bode well.
Yeah, they had their batting average was the 4th worst of any June ever. in Major League history.
Yeah.
But they did hit more homers than the other two teams. They hit 40. But that's pretty much the only way they scored. They didn't have they didn't get guys on base. And you can go on and on. You can tell me till you're blue in the face that Matt Duffy and Nico Hoerner had fixed that offense by simply playing in it. And I'm just not going to believe you. Certainly they would have been better if those two guys had played, but you know,
that long term.
You don't, we really have no idea how long Nico can continue to do it. And then Duffy is, he's played long enough. There's just not that much there. He's a singles hitter who isn't going to strike out very much. And yes, in this offense, that was useful. I didn't understand why, you know, they've tried everybody at leadoff. It's like, why don't you just play Duffy there? He's the only guy on the team who gets on base. And none of the other guys, you're not stealing bases. Although Ross keeps trying. I've never seen a guy call for more hit and runs that don't work than David Ross. It's uncanny. I mean, now they're literally just flipping a coin. Wilson's leading off some days. They tried Jock for a while, and that really didn't work. And so we talked on Remember This Crap. I don't know how we got off on the thing. We're talking about how, so for the longest time, the narrative about the Cubs was they haven't had a good third baseman since Ron Santo. And it was not really true because they'd had Bill Madlock, who'd won two batting titles.
And Ron Santo was serviceable.
Right. When in reality, the thing they haven't had for 70 years is a center fielder.
Jerome Walton had 1 year.
Bob Dernier had 2 good years. And Dexter had 2 good years. Nobody has strung together 3 competent years in a row in center field for the Cubs in 70 years.
Right, they had Lance Johnson, and he had about a half of a good year.
Yep. Kenny Lofton had 2 good months, great months, actually. But it's just, it's amazing that, you know, it doesn't mean that your leadoff hitter thing is solved, because not every center fielder has the tools to be a leadoff hitter. But that's, you're supposed to get offense from your outfield, and the Cubs have not been real good at that. And the current team, the only time they get any offense out of the outfield is when they play the third baseman in the outfield.
Right, because in right field, that's a black hole offensively. Center field's a black hole offensively most of the days. And like you said, Jack is, you know, okay there. But no, I mean, Hayward and Happ just aren't doing it for you. Yeah.
And with Hayward, there's no – with Happ, there's still hope, I guess. He's younger. He really – he, you know, the – well, Pierre was like, we had 2 good years the last 2 years. Well, one was 60 games, the other was 58 or whatever, because he spent almost the whole year in Iowa. But at least he has a track record of the last 2 years of being a productive hitter, where Hayward really hasn't had that track record for a very long time. And he's old, and he has 3 years left still. And there's just nothing you can do with him.
No, there really isn't. Theo talked about him after the first or second year of getting back to being a 6-win player. He's never come close. Yeah. And it's just not going to happen now. If it hasn't happened, it's not going to happen now. And it's just it's an odd thing. You look at, he's a wonderful physical specimen, great guy in the clubhouse. But you know, why doesn't he hit better? I don't know. No. And you know, they've had certainly enough hitting coaches to try to figure that out.
And now you've got he's not the same in right field. And you'd expect that. Everybody gets older every day, and he's not immune to that. But you could always fall back on that before and be like, all right, well, he's not hitting, but he's a gold glove right fielder. He's not a gold glove right fielder.
Not anymore.
And, you know, at some point, somebody's got to just take a look at it and go, all right, do we understand what the concept of a sunk cost is?
Exactly.
Because we can keep paying him to make outs for us, or we can pay him to not make outs for us, and maybe go make outs for somebody else. And at some point, I just think you have to do it. The biggest issue with the Hayward thing, even when they signed him, was – they signed a good player. They did a very Jim Hendry thing, which Theo is not supposed to do. They took a good player, they paid him like a great player, and expected him to become a great player.
And they became infatuated with him because of they saw him hit the ball to the left center in Wrigley Field in 2015 when he was with the Cardinals, and they played him like 117 times. Yeah. And that's exactly what you shouldn't be falling into, which is what they did. Which this front office is supposed to be more dispassionate than that. Yeah. Just like, we're not going to make a publicity stunt by bringing Kerry Wood back. Oh, but I have some breaking news. So another rabbit hole.
Yeah, everybody falls victim to that at some point, even though they they shouldn't. So yeah, I, you know, they're six out now. Their toughest part of their schedule, which was actually pretty brutal, and they did a really good job for a long time in it until the wheels fell off. They really kind of, they started to fall off, and we didn't notice as much when they went to San Francisco.
Yeah.
And they barely salvaged not getting swept there. Then they barely salvaged not getting swept in San Diego. But when they got to LA, they threw the world's most ridiculous no-hitter and then haven't won a game since. Meanwhile, the Brewers have had the easiest schedule they could possibly have drawn up for themselves. They got all their Diamondbacks and Rockies games out of the way, and they won almost all of them. Although the Rockies almost won all three of those games in Miller Park or American
Family
Field.
And they never win at home at all. They never win at home, and they almost, yeah.
Yeah, and they managed to lose all three. So then that's another thing to look at is, all right, that's one of the reasons why yesterday was so frustrating. Because if you win that game, you're four out. You lose it, you're six. And then to go up 7-0 and then get just completely embarrassed and give up 15 unanswered runs. So on Monday night, when it was 4-4 going into the eighth after Patrick Wisdom's monstrous home run. And then Tapera came up and made it. He blew the lead. It went to 6-4. I said, screw it, and I went to bed. And I woke up, and I looked, and saw they had lost 14-4. It's like, I'm glad I missed that. So they gave up 10 unanswered runs on Monday and 15 on Wednesday. That's impressive, actually. That's super hard.
It really is. It's, you know, that's kind of Cubs stuff.
Yeah, that was the kind of Cubs stuff I kind of thought we'd put behind us, but it's always lurking there somewhere. Okay, so you started to tell me before we went recording about your next blog post, and we didn't talk about it because I wanted you to talk about it on the podcast. So what have you got coming up? Because it sounds interesting.
Yeah, I've been trying to kind of spray to all fields here. A few other interests besides baseball. I like soccer, the English Premier League, and it just so happens that the great commentator Arlo White, who does the Premier League for NBC and NBCSN, he's over here now doing the Chicago Fire games. He's going to do four of them, then he's going to go to Tokyo and do the Olympics, and then like 2 days later, the Premier League season starts. But he's in town in Chicago, so he and I become kind of friends on Twitter, and then I got him into the ballpark a couple of times. So I had lunch with him, or I had dinner with him yesterday, and we're going to have a nice little Q&A. I just got done transcribing it, and I'm going to post that Friday morning just about all things, about his love of Chicago, his love of Chicago sports, the upcoming season, like maybe his favorite places to watch games in England. So it's going to be kind of fun. Arlo's a pretty interesting guy and a damn good commentator on English football games.
Yeah. So Arlo's a Cubs fan.
Is yeah. That correct? Yes, he came over here when he was a kid, maybe 13 years old. He has an aunt and uncle who live over here in the Chicago area, and they paid for him to come here for a couple of weeks, and I think it was 1986. So he went to a couple of Cubs games, and he also said he went to the first Bears preseason game that year when they were defending Super Bowl champions, and he said they sat by the tunnel and he was high-fiving guys like Peyton and Dent and McMichael. So it's just kind of one of those things, I guess, happened that he came here, kind of fell in love with it, and he's been back several times. And it was kind of cool last year. He did 2 years ago, he did the seventh inning stretch and got to do kind of a half inning of play-by-play with Len and JD throughout the first ball. So, you know, good for him. That if anybody can kind of live that, it was kind of a cool thing. And we talked about that for the blog too. So that'll be kind of fun. It's kind of a nice long Q&A. We kind of get deep into some things, and it should be really fun, you know, where I'm not hampered, by space constraints as I was in the paper. So it's going to be kind of a fun read, and I'll get it out there on Facebook, Twitter, and everybody can have at it. But Arlo just so cooperative and so nice about things, and even if he does have to watch the Fire for two or three more games here.
And so there's a similar thing with Roger Bennett from Men and Blazers.
Brilliant guy.
Where he came over and became a huge Bears fan. And so he's still an enormous Chicago Bear fan because he spent, I don't know, part of a, and I don't remember if he had a relative. I think he did. I think it was almost the same story. Like he came over and spent time with a relative that lived in Chicago. And while he was here, he fell in love with the Bears. So it's just funny that between Arlo and Roger, we've got a couple of Chicago sports fans who.
But where they differ is that Roger's a White Sox fan. So you know, I don't know how that happened. But he'd be a good get for one of our Your Either podcast or my blog, but to ask him about that. But he's actually a brilliant guy. And I really think the driving force behind the Men in Blazers and just a terrific writer and producer and kind of a wordsmith. You know, he goes on Morning Joe and he was on CBS Morning News the other day. But just I think a really brilliant and interesting guy who lives and dies with Everton Football Club over there, and it's mostly dying.
Yes. Well, as an Arsenal fan, I feel like I'm starting to learn what the Everton fans have been dealing with. But that's
well. Luckily, you have company with across the street with Tottenham. They're going through kind of the same thing,
which is fine.
Yeah,
that's fine. Yeah. Okay. So you also this is interesting. I haven't read it yet, but you wrote a book with a guy named. Is it Jack Schneiderman? Was that his name?
Jack Schneiderman, yeah, who lives up in the north suburbs. I think it's Northbrook. It's a funny thing. It's a baseball-related novel. I was sitting in the press box some years ago, and Pat Hughes says to me, "Well, Bruce, have you ever written any fiction?" And I said, "Come on, Pat, every day."
That's right. Writing about the Cubs.
Yeah, so this is kind of my first attempt. I was speaking before a group that Jack is a member of, 2019, whatever it is, and he called me after that and said, "Listen, he's an older guy. He goes, I've been trying to write this book for many years, but I just can't write. Would you help me?" So it's called The Phenom, and it's a day-by-day newspaper account, something that I got kind of used to over 22 years on the beat, of chronicling a baseball season. It's set with the Cleveland Indians, and this player is a quote-unquote phenom, and he does some crazy things, but there's some social issues there. But it certainly ain't literature, let's put it that way. It's just kind of a fun, breezy read through a baseball season. It really got me started in kind of semi-retirement. It kept me kind of in a groove where I didn't just come home after the season and say, "Now what do I do?"
Yeah.
There's only so much of the house you can paint.
Well, you can always, you can put as many coats on as you want. You can just start over.
I've done that.
And go and go and go. Okay, so the basic idea of the book is it's the Indians, right?
Yeah, Indians are finally trying to win a World Series and maybe getting there. We're no spoilers, of course. But.
Right. And because they inherited the mantle of the longest-suffering franchise thanks to Ben Zobrist and Miguel Montero and Mike McCarthy.
The Cubs tried like hell for them to, not have that. Yeah. But.
And so it's an account of, is it every game or most
of the games? It's every game.
And I see there's box scores.
That was crazy. I had nothing to do with that, and I told him Jack, you're crazy for doing that. So he had the idea of what the narrative would be, and I put the words to it. And he was really great to work with. He let me, and any benefit of the doubt went. He said, "Go ahead, do it that way." But there's an openly gay player on the team who faced some abuse in, of all places, Fenway Park. Imagine that.
Go figure.
Yeah, there's a managerial firing. There's a big, long hitting streak by this phenom guy. And, maybe the Indians get there, maybe they don't. But it's just kind of a fun, breezy thing. And, like, the author, the newspaper writer, his name is Sam Lardner. So I made him be, like, some sort of a distant relative of Ring Lardner. And since he's a smartass, kind of my alter ego, I call him Zing Lardner. So it's just, kind of all fun. Kind of stuff like that. But it was really a lot of fun to do, and it was kind of in my element. But I got to be a little bit more smart-ass than I was, in my real life. So kind of an alter ego, but kind of along the same lines of, trying to keep it. I always tried to keep good humor in my stories, and that's what I tried to do here. But it's a fun read, and it's on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and anybody buys one, I'll sign it and buy you a coffee or whatever.
Yeah, I looked at it. It's really interesting. So I was excited to see it. So I'm gonna order mine. There's a sale it's on sale at Amazon right now. You can get the hardcover for $10.
So, whoa.
Yeah. The hardcover for some reason is actually more expensive than the paperback right now. So there you go. All right, so as we wrap things up here, on August 1st, I'm gonna do the hack sports radio thing. On August 1st, which of our favorite Cubs is still around?
August 1st, who's still around? Rizzo's still around. Contreras is probably still around. And Baez is probably still around.
I would guess. I would agree with all that. If anybody's getting traded, it's Bryant and Kimbrel.
Kimbrel probably gone. Bryant probably gone. And, you know, we'll see from there. But those are just my off the top of the head guesses right now.
Yeah. And then I'll be on backup catcher number 12 probably by then. It's amazing.
Yeah.
They're on, this is six, right? Tyler Guzman was the sixth backup catcher. It's Spinal Tap's drummer at this point.
There doesn't seem to be that many backup catchers in the game.
Well, the best thing is now they actually have more backup catchers than those backup catchers have hits. They have five hits, all four singles and a double. Austin Romine got a double. That's the best they've gotten out of that. And I don't remember what happened. I don't remember what happened to their backup catcher last year.
I don't remember who it was.
Oh, that's right. They just.
He went with the guy that he used to catch here.
Yeah, that's quite a trade.
Those guys are just starting to shave now. The guys they got for those two guys from San Diego, I think they might be turning 16 or 17 by now.
Yeah, it's funny. Victor has played quite a bit. He's basically the primary catcher for the Padres, and he's had some big hits. But you know, he's not terribly well suited to being an everyday catcher. He really was a useful backup catcher because he's a switch hitter. You can play some first in an emergency,
which is fine.
Yeah, that's what you want out of the backup catcher. Yeah. And I'm sure that's why the Cubs were like, I'm sure AJ Preller pushed for it because he was going to be personal catcher like he was here. But, you know, they gave him away. I can't imagine you can't do the exact same trade without Victor Caratini in it and still have Victor Caratini at least. And then he's like, oh, we don't need him. It's backup catcher. How hard is it going to be to find one? Well, they found out. So.
Or not.
All right. Well, yeah, you're right. This July is going to be, it's going to be a shit show is actually what it's going to be.
No, it's going to get ugly.
Yeah. And, we'll just all try to get through it together. All right. Well, thank you, Bruce.
All right, Andy. Always my pleasure. And let's do it again sometime later in the season or whenever. I'm always around.
Great.
Many of us have herpes.